And I do all of this because I really do like, yeah, I can say this. I know they're recording this. I love you adults, but I really like teenagers better. Can I say that? Is that allowed? And the main reason is not because I don't like adults, but because I really like teens because of the fact that you guys are not just unbelievably open about who you are, but you're actually trying to become something different than who you are now. Does that make sense? Like, you guys are working towards something. So whether you're in school and you're working towards graduating, anybody here like, I am so ready to graduate already? Okay. Seniors or juniors? Juniors, and you're a senior and you're like, so done, ready to be out of here. What about some of the younger grades? Are you guys kind of like, how many of you just got into like ninth grade? So just got into high school and you're like, yay. And all of a sudden you're like, there's 4 years of this. Oh, so you weren't ready to leave junior high?
No, I
want to
leave now.
Oh, you're already done. Sweet. Okay, so some of you guys are in trouble. It's going to be a long 4 years. Either that or homeschool and finish faster. Just going to throw that out there. Homeschool? I'll be honest, I was homeschooled too. I finished, this is a true story, I finished all 4 years of high school history in 2 days. 2 days. Because I liked history. I will not tell you how long it took me to do biology, but... Yeah, 4 days. No, it took me like a year, 2.5 years, because I just didn't care hardly at all. But I learned quite a bit from that time. I love high school kids also because you guys are unbelievably open about not just who you are, but some of the dreams. You guys are willing to think outside the box, to think differently about how things have been done in the past. And when I tell that to adults, they're like, well, we are too. And I'm like, oh, you're kidding yourself. That's not true. You've chosen a path in life and there's no deviating from that. And anybody have like parents that way? And I don't mean this is a negative. I'm just saying some people have like, this is who we are. And that can be a good thing if it's based in the identity in Christ. But if you look at the world in which we live in, that's not always the case. In fact, there are people who are like, well, this is who we are. We are we're the sports family. And so everything we do revolves around sports, whether it's watching sports, playing sports, you may have a family that's like, I have one that's like the what I call the movie family. Like, they're constantly going to movies, premieres, shows, plays. It's like everything that could be out and about. That's like their identity is that. And then when you try to shift those things towards, look, there's nothing inherently wrong with those things, but Christ is meant to be your all. It's almost like, well, there's a battle and we know who's going to lose. And it's one of the reasons I love working with teenagers, is because so many of you guys are still trying to figure out who you are, what you want to do, what you want to become. And in reality, that's the journey of faith that we are all called to be on every day, no matter what your age. That you are constantly trying to be changed into the image of Christ. And that's why I enjoy being here. So I was truly excited when they asked me to come and speak. And I went, all right, that'll be interesting, because I don't know if you've noticed this, but I'm not like the other speakers. It's not just that I have a beard and that I'm a lot uglier than the rest of them, but my wife's pretty, so it's okay. They worked out well for me. I tend to teach a little bit differently, mainly because I teach teens most of the time. I teach youth and college age and young professionals. And I found that you guys tend to learn differently than an older generation. And I don't know why this surprises us, because every generation is a little bit different than the one before it or the one after it. You are. How many of you, and this is just a true statement, how many of you have grown up really always kind of having around an iPhone, an iPad in some way in your life? I'm not saying you own one. I'm saying that you've seen them everywhere your entire life, pretty much. That's pretty much every one of you guys. Now, some of you guys are looking and say, well, I've never owned one myself. I'm not saying that. I'm saying you know what it is. You know what it does. You know how it works. I'm in that weird generation that still played outside, but then went inside and played the Nintendo also when it came out. Like, I remember the Christmas when Nintendo came out, and I was like, this is the greatest thing ever. Anybody remember the old Nintendos? They've just kind of started coming back, haven't they? But you used to be able to have to, like, blow on the cartridges to get them to work. Like, I remember that. I was, like, 7 when that happened. So I was, like, that first kid that got an opportunity to, yes. I remember when Super Nintendo came out. And the Christmas with that. And there was this one game that everybody had to have, which was GoldenEye. So it was, what's it called? GoldenEye is 007, so James Bond. That's the game that you had to play. I've been the generation that has grown up with the games as they've evolved. So when I hit my 18, 19 years old, that's when I remember for the first time ever cell phones becoming a real thing. I remember the first TV show that had a cell phone on it. Do you guys know what it was? Fresh Prince of Bel-Air. Will Smith pulled out this massive thing and he pulled up this huge telephone and got on it. And it was almost like he was listening here and then he had to talk here because it was so big. And then you notice that there was this evolution of cell phones where they went from super big to really small, and now we started going back the other way. Isn't that weird? It's like we're like, big screens, let's go really small. We're going for minimalist look. And you got to a point where like the phones were just like little tiny little things, and now we're trying to get bigger and bigger and bigger again. This evolution of time that you guys have and lived through is you're a generation unlike any before. We are also in an unbelievably different perspective here in the church, because for the first time ever, because of the beauty and marvel of modern medicine, we have 5 to 6 generations living in the church at the same time. Who's your oldest member here? Do y'all know? And some of you are like, there's one who feels like he's 100, but I don't know. No, but like, just in general, y'all have an idea? Okay? How old is Clint? Sorry, Clint. I don't know who he is. We have a member at Faith Village who is 101. Okay? 101. Now, do the math. 101 means he was born when? Okay? Which is? Born in 2017. 1916. Which means that he was born during World War I. Okay? He fought in World War II. In fact, this is one of those weird stories. I walked by him one day and sat down next to him on the couch. We have this couch in our foyer in our congregation. Our congregation is about 700 members or so. And so he was sitting out there and he was kind of having his walker by him. And I walked down and I sat down next to him. And he goes, "Hey." I was like, "Hey." And he was like, "You're the new youth minister, right?" This was about a year and a half ago, right after I moved there. And I was like, "Yeah." He goes, "Do you like kids?" Well, yeah, I mean, I kind of have to. Kind of work with them every day. He's like, "That's good. I used to hunt spies." I'm sorry, what? I was like, "That's a weird segue." "You like kids?" "I used to hunt spies." Okay, what does that mean? He goes, "After World War II, used to hunt spies. Was in the military during World War II, fought in World War II, loved my country. Then I got home and I decided to hunt spies." I was like, "What career day were you on where that was an option? I'd like to get into computers. I'd like to hunt people down. That sounds fun." And apparently he was part of one of the pilot programs after the military to hunt down communist and Nazi spies that had defected, that had run away after the fall of Germany and World War II and the rest. And he had hunted spies for like 30, 40 years. Like, he was a spy hunter. That's weird. And as I'm sitting there, his life experience was just dynamically different than mine. Just so different. Now, I even have a different experience than you guys. I grew up in Italy. I grew up before the fall of the wall in Italy. I remember what it was like. I was 7 when the wall fell. So I remember students that came over from Harding University's program that went to the Berlin Wall, brought pieces back of it. I remember seeing the influx of people from Eastern Europe as the Iron Curtain fell and as Russia, the USSR, dissolved. And then suddenly we had Croatia and Bosnia-Herzegovina and Yugoslavia and all these different places that started. And then just droves of people started escaping from behind this decades of poverty and of anguish and of pain and sorrow, and then streaming in to our country in Italy. It was just this huge change in life. And then I remember just as a child, even watching online in the news, and suddenly 24-hour news networks started showing up and television started changing. How many of you guys still watch live television? A couple of you guys. How many of you guys have figured out that there's a thing called TiVo, and you're like, "I don't have to sit here for all of this. I'll pause this and come back later." TiVo is one of the greatest inventions of all time. I'm telling you right now, it's right up there with flying. It's TiVo. The ability to pause live television is nothing short of magical. But how many of you are like Netflix, Hulu, any of those right there? See, you're the generation that's like, I don't even want commercials. I don't have time for this. How about binge watching Netflix? Anybody? Anybody want to be open? Like, yeah, that's... how about this? Anybody ever... I'm really telling you guys a little bit too much about my heart here. Anybody ever feel really constantly judged by Netflix after 3 episodes? They're like, are you still watching? I'm like, stop judging me. You know, like, yes, I'm still watching. So you don't have to deal with the judgment. Our world has changed drastically, even in your time period. How many of you were born in 2005? Okay, so we have one. Awesome. 2005, do y'all realize that you're as old as Facebook? I know some of you are like, what? Yeah. Okay, Instagram? Anybody know when Instagram was founded? And I'm totally fine with you guys using your phones, by the way, to look some of this stuff up. Because this is really... How long do you think Instagram's been around? It's about right around there, 2010, 2011. How about Snapchat? It's like... Actually, I think it's like 3. But it feels... Twitter? I think it's like 2012, 2013, somewhere right around there. But doesn't it feel like it's been around forever? When all of these things are bringing Pinterest, any of the girls in here Pinterest? I'm in your room. I know y'all know Pinterest. I can tell. And I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean you guys did something actually good, and we all know. And I can say this right. Love you guys out there. But in church buildings, we're not really known for our great ability to do decor. Can we admit that? It's like a fake ficus in front of everything. but in here, I'm like, they looked at Pinterest. I like it. You know, it's like, we tried. Right? And I mean that in a really good way. So it's exciting to see classrooms that have things on the walls that represent spiritual things instead of just something from the 1940s and 50s. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but it's nice to, come into the 20th. I'm happy when we get into the 20th century. So 21st century is even... That's crazy to get in something like that. But the reason I bring all of this up is because we've had such a change in culture, such a change. You guys realize that's why there's so much conflict at times even within the church. It's because when you talk about something going, man, I want something just to be different or better or more, you're talking at times to people who've been around since, in our case, since 1916. Things are better than they were in 1916. There's no world wars going on. Now, it seems like we're constantly on the verge of something like that, but there are no world wars the way that they experienced, the way that he experienced in those ways. He's not having to hunt down Nazi and communist spies across most of the known world. Not that there aren't people out there who are doing that, but the world is better. In fact, you guys realize that y'all are the first generation that has every answer that you could possibly think of when it comes to questions available at your fingertips. Somebody asked me when I got here, it's like, do you need directions on how to get around town? And I went, no, I have a phone. But I remember then the person asking me, and I went, oh, they probably don't realize that. They're not being ignorant or small-minded. They just don't even realize how the way that I work, the way that I grew up, the way that I see things is just different, isn't it? We are living in a different world. And it is changing every day. New apps are coming out, new updates, new everything. The world is constantly changing. And we have never been so connected, but never been so artificial. We're going to play a game of social media. How many of you are on social media in some form or fashion? Okay? All right. We're going to play who has the most followers. Okay, and this isn't really like, y'all realize that means nothing in real life, right? Okay, perfect. Okay, perfect. And we're all fine with who's probably got the most. Just take a guess. Somebody, give me a number. What's your number? 900. 900 on what? Instagram, okay? Not 900? Okay, anybody? Sweet. Okay, how many of those 900 people do you know? Okay, so percentage-wise, 60%, 70%, 80%? 80%, awesome. Okay, so, and this is in note, and I'm going to remind you guys again, numbers mean nothing. So, across my platforms of social media, I probably have about 35,000. just in the States. Now, I'm also on Chinese Twitter. Do you guys know what Chinese is called? QQ. So I lived in China for 3 years. I'm on QQ. I have 475,000 on QQ. Okay? Now, that's because I'm an English teacher who teaches English online. If you know anything about Chinese students, they constantly want to practice their English, learn new English. So that's what I use. And do you guys know what I put out there? It's Bible verses. Without the verses, without where it's from, but instead I just simply put out the verse. Then they have to practice saying it, learning it, and the rest. And I've had hundreds, if not thousands, of conversations where people go, that's a really neat thing. Where's that from? And then through private messages, and then I'll start private messaging them back and forth and telling them where it came from. That's how I've worked. So that's where that came from. But that has everything. If you guys join Chinese Twitter, it's called QQ, literally, you would have 100,000 by tomorrow, half the time. Okay? It's China. There's like 1.6 billion people, and almost all of them are on Twitter, Chinese Twitter, because everything else is banned. Like Facebook is banned, actual Twitter is banned. They can only be on Chinese Twitter. Okay? So that's why everybody's on that one. Imagine if everybody was banned from Instagram, from everything else, and you could only go to Facebook for social media interaction. That's where you would be, right? It's kind of what happens. So I have all these followers, but I'll be honest with you, I don't know, I think I know two or three actual of the Chinese Twitter. Of the 35,000 or so across the other platforms, I maybe know, I would say I probably know 1,000 of them in real life. Now, I've met others, like I met probably 5 or 6 that I'm friends with on Facebook that are here. Like here, that's the reason I'm here, is they I don't know if y'all realize this, they met me through Facebook. And they were like, hey, we have some information. I run a media company, so when they were looking at doing new media stuff, they asked me to speak on that, so I did a Skype session with the church here, and I met like 30 of them. Then I got friend requests from a bunch of them, and so I've been friends with them, but I never met them in real life until I got to spend time with them and eat dinner with them and the rest. Besides that, we were friends on Facebook, and that's not a real thing. Like, we understand that, right? Knowing somebody artificially is completely different than knowing them in real life. But the problem is, especially in faith, we have had this bad habit of almost making life and faith artificial too. You have friends online, right? You do in a way, but they're not real. In fact, don't people act totally different online than they do in real life? People who never say a word in real life suddenly talk nonstop online. Any gamers in here? Got some gamers? Sweet. You guys know this. And I'll just say this. There's some of you guys that are real quiet in here this morning, but you get online, you play your games, and suddenly you're talking nonstop, and I mean, you have this whole entire persona that you become. You become this other person in that. And we've never been more connected while being at the same time completely disconnected from reality. Social media and the rest has always been to bring people together. But it really hasn't done that. Let me give you an example. There's a friend of mine named James Smith. Now, James, he's an older guy, late 60s, worked for years and years for a company. Awesome guy, truly. He has a dog named Spud. Spud is nuts. Went a little crazy. Had to get him neutered. Okay, was a little kind of went wild for a while. Had an opportunity to see that and to see the dog kind of calm down a little bit. He's got 2 girls, and both of his girls are now married and they have kids. In fact, but he has this awesome time where he spends a lot of time with his granddaughters doing some really cool things. In fact, one thing I can tell you about him is he loves his granddaughters. Loves his wife. They've been married for 40 years. Spent years and years with her traveling different places, but now that they're retired, he travels even more. He loves to mow his grass and his yard with a John Deere tractor. That's his thing. Loves to be out there. Just has an awesome life, wonderful people. Spends an enormous amount of time with his grandchildren. Like, just a lot of time with his grandchildren. In fact, for his, I believe it was his granddaughter's 10th birthday, he took her to high tea. They actually flew to New York and did high tea in one of those big fancy tea places. That's what they did as a gift for her. Awesome people. Now, I need to be completely honest with you. I have no idea who that is. James Smith is the number one name, most common name in the United States. I asked Siri, tell me who what the most common name in America is, and it's James Smith. Then I went and typed it into Facebook, and I found that guy. Everything I just told you about him, I learned from his Facebook profile. I don't know him, but I learned that from pictures, from comments. Now, tell me that's not creepy also that I could do that, right? Some of you are like, no, it sounded like you really knew him. No, that was just from photos on Facebook. And no kidding, I've seen this analogy done before in the same way with different individuals. And it's amazing what you can find out about people, what you can know about people, but never actually know them. There's a difference between knowing things about people and actually knowing them. And you guys know exactly what I'm talking about, because there's a lot of people who make a lot of assumptions about you, but they don't know you. How about in your high schools? Are there people who have perceptions about you that you are like, that's not me at all? But they hold on to that for some reason? Or maybe they've even created that for you. Oftentimes we call that concept the act of bullying, right? Where they create something or start saying things about you that you know are not true, but they continue to push those things. Like, that's not me. That's not who I am. And if you guys want to look, we're going to be in Hebrews 13, because I want you guys to catch this. And I'm really focusing almost my entire class time on just a few verses. And what time are we supposed to get done? 9:45? Is that about right? Okay. Because I want us to catch something in the reality of the world that you guys live in, and how often this is broken premise. You guys see in verse 1, it says, let brotherly love continue. Now, what's brotherly love? Do you guys know that there's four different Greek words for love, right? Do you guys know what they are? I'll be really impressed, seriously. Can you name me one? Agape. We know that one, right? That's what the type of love. It's like family love, right? It's agape love. In fact, in Italy growing up, an agape literally is the word that they use for when we have a potluck. And if there's anything that we know do well, it's potlucks, is it not? You guys ever heard the joke? There's this teacher told her class in second grade and said, tomorrow I need you to bring an item from your faith that helps us know who you are. So a little boy walks in the next day and says, my name's David, I'm Jewish, and this is a menorah. Another little boy walks up, my name's Muhammad, this is a prayer rug, and I'm Muslim. Another little boy walks in and he goes, I'm Jacob, I'm a member of the Church of Christ, and this is a casserole dish. And I was like, it's a joke. It's kind of weird when you think about it. You're like, no, that's kind of what we're known for. Like, we're known for, in Italy, those are called agape. It literally means brotherly love. It's time or family love where we get together. Now, there's also brotherly love. What's the city of brotherly love? Do y'all know? Philadelphia. So phileo is the Greek word for brotherly love. We have one word for love in English, and it's love. But here's the problem. Context matters, because I can say, and I shared this with you guys yesterday, I can say, I love tacos and I love my wife. I hope you guys know that there's a difference between the two of those, right? I do not love tacos as much as I love my wife. I actually don't love tacos nearly as much as I love my wife. But we have one word for it. Now, there's also storge, and then there's also eros. Now, eros is what we commonly associate with the concept of erotic love. It's sexual love. It's the time. It's a husband and wife type of love. All of those four words are there. When it says brotherly love, it's talking about us together as a family. It's talking about having a love for one another as Christians, as believers, as a community of faith, that we love one another. So, for example, when I got here on Thursday. I got here Thursday. When I got here Thursday, I picked up the rental car, which ended up being a rental truck, and drove over here, and I walked in, and instantly everybody greeted me. When I put the name tag on, they're like, oh, you're one of the speakers. And it was just like we were what? Friends, family, brothers in Christ. In fact, there was nobody that instantly questioned. I was like, who is this guy? Now, there was a couple people looked at me and went, and no kidding, this happened, and I love the fact that I get to put this on video. I had a guy, I think it was on Friday when I walked in, I didn't have my name tag on, and he goes, hey, it's nice to meet you, and I said, nice to meet you too. And he's like, would you mind filling out one of the cars? I said, actually, I just left it in the truck. I'll go get it real quick. I'll put it back on. I'm one of the speakers. And he goes, no, you're not. And I went, yeah, I am. And he goes, really? And I went, yeah. what's wrong with me? Like, what did I have on me? But, and I know it, it's because I don't fit the typical preacher look, right? I gave up being handsome a long time ago. So I just kind of went with, let's see what happens. But I'm a big believer, by the way, that if beards were meant if men were meant to have beards, that they would grow naturally. And they do. Just throwing that out there. It's not like I'm doing something that didn't happen naturally, right? Plus, and this is what I tell people all the time, my wife likes long hair and beards. So guess who I'm going to make happy far more than I care about anybody else? Her. Because a happy life is a happy wife. Okay? And that's my goal. Happy life. I want to live. Okay? And so I love my wife for these moments. But I love that when I walked in, though, that there was a sense of family. There was a sense of we're one. Even though I'd never met anybody here, let brotherly love continue. You've experienced that, haven't you, before? When you've gone to places and you've walked in and you just kind of felt like I'm home, these are my people. It's weird, isn't it? Like, I don't know these people, but these are my people. But notice this next one. Do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers, for thereby some have entertained angels unawares. Now let me ask you this. He goes from brotherly love and then he switches to something completely different. But we often think this is the same thing. Let brotherly love continue. Also, do not neglect to show hospitality to strangers. Now, he just mentioned brotherly love. So guess who he's not talking about in this scenario? Family members, Christians, us. So last night I had the opportunity to go and to eat at one of the houses. I can't remember the family's name. What's the family's name? Patterson's. Okay. So we went over there. Awesome. Like, we had home cooked meal. It was awesome. Seriously. Truly wonderful. And as I sat there, I wasn't a stranger. Now, you may not have known me all that well, but I wasn't a stranger. We were family. You could feel that even in the room. There was 25, 30 people in that house, but we weren't strangers. Now, is that hospitality? Absolutely. But is it the hospitality that's being referenced here? No, it's not. It's something completely different. But it's also, and if we can be honest and let's have a family moment here, a church family moment, we are horrific about actually being hospitable to strangers. Can we be honest about that? I don't know your youth groups. I don't know where you're from. And so I can say this. We have a rule in our youth ministry and youth program, which is that nobody ever sits alone and everyone gets talked to, no matter what. Now, how we deal with that is I actually have a group of kids who volunteer and they're jokingly referred to as the lunch ladies. Now, that's really weird. I know this. But let's just play this out and let me show you how this works. How many of you go to a high school or junior high? I know, besides the homeschoolers. Homeschoolers won't get this, but that's okay. Okay? When you got, do you remember the first day you walked into the high school or junior high cafeteria? Do you remember that? Some of you are like, yes. It was not a good day. You walked in, you got your food, and then you did this. You turned and you looked. Anybody look out across the room like, now where do I go? You have those moments. And then you see in the distance, oh, there's the sports people. They're sitting together. Oh, there's the kids playing Dungeons and Dragons in the back corner. There's the cheerleaders over there. There's the job. I mean, isn't that exactly how it plays itself out? You guys are like, is he there? How does he know? It's because it plays out in every school across America. It doesn't really matter. That's how it works out. And what I found is that there's a lot of churches and youth ministries that are the same way. Kids walk in and they see, and don't kid yourself, you guys have your own little cliques, don't you? And they walk in and they have no idea where to go. Now, in a lunchroom, though, there is one group of people who are specifically there to serve everybody. Who is it? The lunch ladies. What do? They make sure you get fed. Isn't that right? So we have a group of kids who get together on Wednesday nights, right before our normal. Y'all have a Wednesday night service? Okay, we do. It's 7 o'clock. It's Wednesday. It's like it's such a Church Christ thing, right? Wednesday's 7 o'clock. It's scriptural. It's in there. It's in First Opinions 4, you know, whatever you want to call it. But it's there. And so they come at 6:30 instead of 7. They come in early and we talk about, we spend time praying for and talking about kids who have not been coming recently, kids who have been missing. and they commit to sending them messages and to writing them notes and to talking to them and trying to invite them to come to our next events, whatever it may be. But then when worship starts and kids start showing up, there's always a few that will show up late, or they will sit by in the back by themselves. Sometimes it just happens naturally. That's just what happens. Where there's a seat, or let's say, this is a great example, let's say somebody just kind of walked in and sat over there by themselves. You would have seen one of them get up, walk across the room, and sit down next to them. That's what they do. Now, it seems weird, and you're like, that's kind of odd. But after a while, you start realizing, what could that possibly mean to the individual there? Somebody did what? They got up to come over and say hi to me. They came and sat next to me. They went out of their way. Everyone gets talked to and no one sits alone. That's the constant premise. Now, you guys, I know this enough because some of y'all are from, I wouldn't say small youth groups, but smaller youth groups. Some of you guys may be the only kids in your youth group, right? And when a visitor shows up, it's like, who are they? But imagine if you looked at it a little bit differently, because while they may be a Christian, brotherly love must abound. So guess what? We have a lot of kids who visit who are already members of the church. But it doesn't change what our duty is to be a brotherly, to show them brotherly love. But what if they're a stranger? What if they have no ties to the church? And that's what I'm seeing over and over and over again now, is as kids come in, we have kids who were once strangers who are now constantly attending, whose parents don't go anywhere, who have no ties to churches whatsoever, but they like feeling like they belong somewhere. And so we decided to change, in fact, our wall. We have this wall when you walk in. We have a youth center that's separate from the church building. The youth center, probably about 30,000 square feet. It's probably about, if I can be honest, probably the size of the auditorium. And large youth center. And so when they walk in, we have a wall that's right when they walk in. And the kids and I decided to write some words on there. So we wrote very large on the wall. As you walk in, it says, "You belong here." Those are the words they chose. Whereas we put out there, it was like, we want to make it to where when people walk in, they feel what? You're home. This is where you belong. You guys, we live in a broken, broken world. You see it every day. If you're on social media at all, you see brokenness and anger and resentment and pain and suffering and evil. I'm always grateful for the good people who are on social media, who are trying to make it a better place, trying to show. And I'm a big believer. In fact, I tell parents this all the time. You cannot hide your head in the sand as it comes to technology in this world. Your kids will be affected by it. They will be involved in it in some way. Either you can teach them that it's evil in all things and never teach them how to use it appropriately, or they're going to rebel. Anybody here kind of want to admit that at times? And you're like, I'm not supposed to have social media, but I do. So yeah, some of y'all are looking like, well, I don't know what you're talking about. You know exactly what I'm talking about. But I'm a big believer in teaching people how to use the things correctly. I said it yesterday, I'll say it again, social media is a lot like money. It's about how you use it. It's not money that's evil, it's the love of money that is evil. It's not money itself, because we need money, right? If all money was evil, then guess who's not? As Christians, we shouldn't have what? Jobs, money, nothing. But what I really want to focus in on this last little part here is this concept of strangers. And we really have to grasp this. And this is where I want to tie it all together. We all are, far too often, strangers, even in our own churches. Do you guys know some of the older folks in your church? Some of y'all are like, yeah, y'all mentioned one guy earlier. Is he old? How old is Clint? It's your dad? Sweet. Okay. Sweet. So he's not a stranger. Okay, sweet. All right. Now, do you guys have some older folks in this congregation that y'all don't really know? So we have a banquet once a year. And this is my favorite thing that we do, honestly. We have a banquet once a year that we put on for we call them our 39ers. And that's what they call themselves. I used to call them the Owls, which was the older, wiser, loving seniors. Sounds like a nice name, right? And the Owls. But mainly because... I probably shouldn't say this on video, but the main reason I call them owls is because every time they look at teenagers, they go like, they look shocked and surprised. I'm like, why are you looking like that? But then we came up with an acronym, which is very much a church thing to do, and it worked out well for us. But we do put on a dinner for them just to get to know them. So the whole entire dinner we did this last year was the Andy Griffith Show. Do you guys ever remember Andy Griffith? So all of the kids dressed up as characters. We put on play, basically, of old scenes. Then we told all the people to come to the dinner. You have to dress up from that era too. So we had a combined dinner where we cooked, we made all the meals, we did everything, but we all got to dress up. They got to play and interact with the kids, and they had to learn the kids' names. I know, it's a novel approach. This year, they're already looking forward to it. We told them this next year we're going to do I Love Lucy. Like, that's going to be the thing. And so all the ladies were like, oh, we're going to have to go get our hair done, just like Lucy used to get it done. I'm like, sweet, they're getting into this now. So we're going to have, like, we have, like, fun little rehearsals where we get together and act out different scenarios and different things from that. And what it's done is it's created a conversation that has not been there. You guys, we have way too many divisions in the church. And I'm talking about even within our own churches when it comes to the ages, because we have bought into the lie. And this is where I get on to my adults all the time. They bought into the lie that you guys are lazy and narcissistic and all you want is technology and you don't care about real things. Does that actually reflect you? It's not true. In fact, I keep telling them that's not what I found about teenagers. I found teens in this generation to be unbelievably loving and caring about things that are on a much bigger scale. They care about the homeless. They care about the drug addicts. They care about their friends who are struggling with same-sex attraction. They care about these people because when you say these things, then they instantly bristle and go, no, no, you seem to be against me. And that's one thing I have learned about your generation. You don't like people who are against you. Can we say amen to that one? You want people to be for you. You want to be for things, not against things. And let me show you how this has played out in the church. We've got a lot of young men and young women who have left and are leaving the church in droves because they feel like all the church is all the things that they're not supposed to do in life. And that's what they feel that they've been taught. Now, is that true? No. In fact, God is for you. He wants you to come to a knowledge of Him. He is for you. And the reason why He sets limitations and the reason He disciplines us is so that we might grow, because He has a better life for us. But we're far too often, we're strangers, even within our own churches. We're also strangers in our community, in our culture. The other reason that I love you guys, I love culture, I love traveling. Anybody here, if you could travel, you would travel? A huge show. Anybody here never been out of Idaho? I kind of want to know. Sweet, you've been out of Idaho. All right, what's the furthest you've been? Hawaii. Vietnam, nice. Oklahoma, sweet. Disney World, so Orlando, okay. Guatemala, Florida, sweet. All right. Montana, Eastern Texas. Okay. Nice. That counts, because we believe in birth and life and conception. That counts. Okay. I've traveled to 40 plus different countries in my life. I've been to Vietnam. I've traveled extensively in different places. I've lived in China and Italy and Greece. I've just gone all over the world. And I'm telling you, the more I travel, the more I fall in love with culture, fall in love with different cultures, learning different things. When people walk into my office is like an office / studio. And it's a little bit bigger than this room. And it's not because I need an office that big. It's because we have a television studio that does stuff in there. So that's why we have it that large. But when people walk into my office, they actually look around and they go, there's a lot of weird foreign gods all over your wall. Like, because I have things from Vietnam and from China and Buddhism and Hinduism, all these different things. It's like, look, they're all fake. They're not real. Like, they're statues and stuff. But they're reminders of my travels and things, because I love culture. And one of the things I encourage constantly to an older generation is the church, is that we cannot isolate ourselves from the culture we live in. We cannot so remove ourselves in fear of how culture will affect us that we no longer actually affect the culture we're in. And the way we've done this is, guys, is we've closed off our homes to our neighbors. We don't even know our neighbors' names. We build huge buildings and we invite people to things. We build gyms and we build coffee houses and we build all those things. And we say, come to us. Come into our place and play. That's what we do. And in and of itself, there's nothing inherently wrong with that. But the difference is that God says, where you are, as if you weren't driving by 400 coffee shops on your way to church. Instead, He says, go to the coffee shop, learn the guy's name that works there. Ask him about his life. Be hospitable to strangers. Invite them into your home. Hey, we get together and watch movies. You're a movie family? We have the same, we watch movies. And then we spend some time talking about life and about things. So here's my question. Do you have friends who are not Christians? See, this is why I love teens. because you still do. And this is where I share so often with adults and the rest. And they're like, well, I do at my work. And I was like, those are colleagues. I asked, do you have friends who are not Christians? Are you investing in people and sharing in life with them? Plant where you are planted. Love where you need to love. Be hospitable with your life, with who you are. Because otherwise we run the risk in church, as we do online, of being and knowing people. We just know information about them, but we don't know who they actually are. We can tell you all sorts of stuff about them, but we don't know them. And here's what the big danger is you can get to a point where that's how you start looking at God. For example, do you realize there's a difference between knowing the book and knowing the author? You guys can quote me 1,000 verses and memorize all of the scriptures in there, but do you know the one who wrote it? Do you know the one who spoke those things into existence? And when he says, is that the end bell? The devil, no. All right, well, I'll close with this. Do you truly understand that there's a difference between knowing God and simply knowing His Word? It's one thing to know, well, I'm supposed to be hospitable. That means inviting people into my house. Well, I'll do that. That's what we do with other Christians. I'm telling you, it starts also with knowing your brothers and sisters in Christ. We have to break some generational gaps that we have currently. And that means you also have to love and want to get to know them. But on the other side of that, your friends, can your home not be a safe place for them? Can it not be a place where they can come and visit and learn and love? So that's what I want to leave you guys with today, because I hope that when I get to come back, I don't know, next year, 2 years, 5 years from now, or if I don't see you again until we arrive in heaven together, that there will be people who are not there, or people who are there because of something that you did going forward. So here's my question for you. Who's going to be in heaven tomorrow because of what have you said today? Like, how awesome is that going to be? Who's going to be in heaven tomorrow because of something you said today? All right. I'll say this in closing. I love you guys. I really do. And I don't mean that just the love like a taco. I mean, I really do. I love you guys. And I want to see you do great things in life. Look me up on social media. I'm on there. I'm on there all the time. I'd love to connect with you guys. But now that I've met you, I hope you know that even on social media, I will always want more deeper than that. I just don't want to see photos. I want to be able to see how you're doing. Send you a message. What's going on with life? Are you okay? Can I help you with anything? Okay? Love you guys. Thank y'all so much for y'all's attendance and participation. Y'all been wonderful.